Another year has come and gone. Are you wondering what the future holds? Are you struggling with the decision about love, money, your career, your family? StarPsychics.com, that stars with a Z, has the answers you desire. StarPsychics.com is the best and brightest advisor site on the internet, staffed by top-rated, professional, fully tested, and certified advisors. This is the real deal. At StarPsychics.com, you create your own personal account, and you pick your advisor by reading their extensive bios. Then you decide on a budget that you are comfortable with. Your pathway to a clearer and brighter future is just a few clicks away. No gimmicks, no bait and switch. StarPsychics.com has daily blogs and lots of links to help you develop your own intuition. Log on now. That's StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. And here's the best part. They're available 24/7. StarPsychics.com. Remember, stars with a Z. You must be 18 years or older. Your future awaits.
Hello, everybody. This is Natalie, of course, also known as StarsCast. And I have some good news. Not just the guest I have, but we are redoing the site. Star Psychics is being redone by Tony. I have a gal who's from Kenya. She's a designer, and she's been working on Pinterest. So you could, you know, wander over there. Just click the link at the bottom of Star Psychics, and you'll see all the beautiful work that she's done. She's going to help in the background design and the coloring. And no, I'm not getting away from my blue. My blue will be there. Everybody knows that's Natalie's blue. But we're going to, you know, add a mobile app and all these kinds of bells and whistles. And it's overdue, but it's time. So I'll let everybody know about that. Well, you'll know when you go there to starswithaz.com. Now I want to talk about Mystic Living today. This gal in Kenya, I got her working, I'm telling you. She's also helping me with the Flip magazine so that I can make it look like a real magazine. That's been my dream. Yeah, everybody knows that. And the magazine has kind of been like I call my dark horse, meaning it's, I knew it was going to come from behind. You know, it's kind of like this horse that's in the back, and it keeps running and running and running, but it never goes to the front of the line. I always felt that the magazine would. So she's working on that for me also. Oh, yeah, she's just working away. and I really love it. Now, the new issue is up, of course, and in about a week I send out my reminder for articles and poetry and excerpts, and I have such a list of publicists that all I have to do is ask, and sometimes I don't even have to ask. You know, I just get everything sent. Like right now, I've got probably 10 pieces of email here. Can you put this in the magazine? Can you put this in the magazine? So it makes me feel really, really good. And we all know how much I love that magazine. That, you know, I didn't think I'd ever be doing something like this 20 years ago. But anyways, that will be, the new issue will be up on November 1st. And the reminders will be going out. Now, let's get to my guest. This gentleman is famous in his own right. I mean, you know, I'm just so honored to have him, and we have talked just a little bit about some things, and he is from Jerusalem, and everybody knows that's my most favorite place. Everybody knows that. If you don't, you should know by now. Anyways, I'd like to bring on Moshe Gerst, and he wrote a book called It's All the Same to Me, A Torah Guide to Inner Peace and Love of Life. Welcome today. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Natalie, for having me. What a pleasure to be here.
Oh, you know, and I told him that I mean, he's a rabbi, and I told him, made me feel really good, gave me goosebumps. I said, would you like me to call you rabbi? He said, you know, I think he was kind of taken back by it, were you? Because most people, I'm very respectful. You know, it's good to me. I mean, that's an honor to me. You know, I was born, raised a Catholic. It doesn't, you know what I'm saying? And so I had to ask him that. Okay, so Jerusalem, what's it like there today?
Well, if you saw the beautiful sunset I'm looking at right now, you would say it was perfect. It is so gorgeous here, and really just appreciating this day. And the overall world climate here is really nice. It was a beautiful day, beautiful week.
That's good. Now, we all know about, you know, we'll talk about the Jerusalem itself, but let's talk about you. Okay, did you always want to be a rabbi? I mean, was that's what you wanted to do? Was it because of your family. I always like to start at the beginning with the authors because people are listening and they're thinking, well, how did this happen? I mean, you just didn't step out of the door and here you are.
Yeah, no, that was certainly not what I thought. However, I think if you ask my mother, she'll tell you that she always knew. That's how the story goes by her. But I'm born and raised in Los Angeles in North Hollywood. And being from L.A. And being from a creative family, I was always involved in the arts on some level. And for me, music was and still
yes.
is my passion in so many ways. And I spent every day of my teenage years as a singer-songwriter for a rock band, and that was my life for nearly a decade. Before I had an aha moment, a spiritual awakening that sent me to Jerusalem, where I spent the last decade and a half in study and practice. When I was 20 and on tour, and when you have my songs were on MTV, I wasn't thinking about wearing a rabbi hat. That was
no.
nowhere in
no.
my peer view.
Now, can you tell us what rock band it was?
The name of the band was In Theory. We played together for about 7 years.
Uh-huh.
We were signed to an indie label in L.A. called Shelter from the Storm Records, and I think we were under contract for a couple years before I made the decision to leave. And with a lot of grace, and I have so much appreciation. Even though I was still in the middle of a contract, they let me go to pursue what was important for me, and I ended up in Jerusalem.
Well, I mean, your aha moment. Let's start with that. What happened that kind of changed the course of your life? It really did, right?
It really did. You know, I was at the record release party of the last album that we put out together, and everybody's having a great time, you know, music blasting, people, talking, schmoozing, drinking, having a nice, evening together. And somebody came over to me, and it was completely out of character of him, and asked me, how long are you going to do this for? And I said, do what? He said, play music, which I thought is a funny question to ask the singer of a band at the release party of one of their albums. And I said, I don't know, probably till we're successful, and then we'll settle down. And he pushed further and said, well, when's that? I said, when's what? And at this point, I'm feeling pretty irritated. He said, when is successful? And I think at the time, I told him to grab another beer and walk in the other direction because he was killing my buzz. And but the question burned in me like a fever. I woke up with it the next morning, and I couldn't shake it. I never thought about life beyond
music.
life beyond music, life beyond the stage. Like, that was everything. My heart pumped melody, and it still does. But that's really what triggered a series of thoughts. And I spent the next 2 or 3 months, even while we were on tour, really investigating deeper what life was about, what I felt life was about. I started reading more. I hadn't read anything really in my life. I was not well-read, though I was well-educated. I just didn't like to read. And I started opening books, and I started looking into philosophy, and I started looking into Torah and some ideas in mysticism and just kind of dabbling. And one day I woke up, and I was walking down the street, and I remember getting hit with this absolute lightning bolt of clarity, kind of like, when it's a dark night and you can't see anything, but there's a moment of where the lightning strikes, and in that moment, the entire horizon and everything is clear just for that moment. And then a moment later, that flash is gone. It was that very clear moment of, oh wow, I need to turn. There's a place for me to turn. I see that the direction that I'm walking in isn't going to lead me to what I ultimately desire. And that's, it wasn't very much long after that. I think it was probably 6 weeks later, I was on a flight to Jerusalem to study.
Did you know you were going to go to Jerusalem? I mean, is that
not a
place that came to you and you thought, if I want to do this, that's That's the Holy Land. I need to go there. I mean, did somebody encourage you, or where'd that come from? I mean, you could have gone anywhere.
Yeah. That's right. I could have gone anywhere, and I appreciate you asking that because, you know, a lot of people just take that for granted. And I could have gone anywhere, and there were actually a lot of options for me to go. I was in touch with somebody that I felt was spiritually connected. I grew up Jewish and connected to the Orthodox community, though my family wasn't Orthodox until much later in my life, in my childhood. I called him just because I wasn't sure what to do, but I wanted to search, and I wanted next steps. And he was of the impression that I would be able to at least start my journey over there and see where it took me. My family had just recently moved to Israel 2 years prior, so both my brothers and my parents were all in Israel. So it was a good choice, you know, that I'd be able to be near my family, you know, and there was, you know, my roots as being born Jewish. I always had an affinity to wanting to come and spend time here, though I had never really spent any significant time here before. And then with his kind of, you know, clear vision of, he felt that that's where I would gain a lot, a tremendous amount of perspective and clarity. I thought, look, I lose nothing in going there. I didn't go with an agenda. I went on a one-way ticket with intentions.
Oh, one-way, how brave. Yes, okay. You were guided, there's no doubt in my mind.
Without question, the whole thing was miraculous. I felt led the entire way.
You were, I'm sure of it. Okay, so you get there, and then what? I mean, you didn't know anybody, right? I mean, where did you go?
I didn't even know where. Where I was landing, I found a place. You know, it's called the yeshiva, and ultimately, a yeshiva is something of a seminary or an ashram for Torah study. And I didn't know what the schedule was. I had only spoken to the person who ran this place once. It's called Machon Yaakov, the David Robinson Institute of Torah Education. I think that's what it's called. And I had only spoken to them once, but. I didn't have another place. I didn't know. It was really just being open to wherever I was going to be taken. And they had a room for me in the institution. They have a dormitory apartments, and I went and stayed there. And I woke up and I met all the other people who were learning in the institution, and they seemed like great guys. It was a male only institution, and I started
almost
learning.
Almost like a seminary.
Yes. And it was with no intention of becoming a rabbi or anything. These were all people like me who came to find meaning and purpose and understanding about life. And I fell in love. I mean, it was like somewhere between 8 and 10 hours a day of studying from different texts, listening to different lecturers. Of everything from ethics to mysticism, psychology, philosophy, metaphysics. It was just amazing. My mind was blown daily, a deeper understanding of my own heritage, as well as the beauty of the more Kabbalistic tradition, and seeing the unreal nature of the ancient Hebrew language, and it's how every letter has a numerical value, and every number related to another concept, which reflected, you know, another idea. It was a whirlwind and a whirlpool of, you know, intellectual and spiritual delight. It felt like being in a candy store.
Yeah, like you're on a high. You know, you're getting so much and you're feeling so good about it. And sometimes we don't know. I mean, my story is really, I mean, I'll tell you part of it. But some people, you know what it is, they don't go through the doors that are open for them. You really have to understand that there are synchronicities. Things happen exactly the way they're supposed to. But, you know, they come to you, but it's up to you to take those steps in that direction. And I always tell people when I talk to them, if something opens, at least peek your head, put your head through there and look. look it over. If you don't like it, back out and close the door. You know, I mean, nobody's tying you there. Nobody's got you in chains there. Because that's what I have always done my whole life is I really didn't think about certain things. I just went, you know. Okay, so how long did you stay there?
Well, in this particular place, I actually stayed for 2 years.
Okay.
I fell in love with everything about it. And then after that, I'd become much more well acquainted with Israel, with Jerusalem, and with, you know, all the different institutions that were around. So I went from there to another institution for another 2 years to study under a very specific rabbi and lecturer who just brilliant, off the charts brilliant, and he really helped open my mind analytically how to approach life and how to approach text, which was followed by 5 years in probably the biggest Torah institution in the world. It's called the Mir Yeshiva, where there's at any given moment 5,000, you know, individuals that range
wow.
from 18 to 80, right, and everything in between of people who are studying and learning either by themselves or in groups or in partners, you know, from morning to night. There is not a moment where there's not someone or some group that is studying something, and that's 24 hours a day. I mean, there's always someone or a group or a partnership or something that's happening. It's really a phenomenal place, and it's more of a university in senses, which is like there's a whole campus. I think it's 6 or 7 buildings, and it was such an experience, an unbelievable experience to be learning in such an environment, and you know, passion and fire and depth and understanding. Really, so grateful for that time. And then after that, then I spent
absolutely. Now what about? I mean, they just fed you and clothed you and gave you housing. Did you have to do any work for anything? I mean, I'm just being the novice here. I'm pretending I don't know what I'm doing, but but I do. I'm trying to find out.
Yeah.
I mean, was this? You know, somebody will say, gee, this is really great. You know, I just arrive and I'm taken care of and I study. And so did you have to work at all?
So, I mean, it's not, it's, that would be great if it were all free, but it's not.
Correct.
You know, every
place,
right. That's right. Every place has their own tuition. You know, some institutions do have a dormitory, some don't. Some places offer opportunities to work within the institution. Otherwise, you have to find means outside of that. So whether it's having part-time work, you know, in a lot of ways, I had some investments as well as, you know, I was still collecting royalties from music from beforehand, which even though it wasn't
correct.
Much.
Correct, okay.
It,
yes, but yes.
It went a long way when I was in Israel. And on top of that, you know, I had a lot of support from my parents, which was really helpful. And so between the little that I had and what my parents gave me, it allowed for me to be in that position as long as I was, which was that's a blessing in its own right.
Yeah, yeah. When you're talking about that, your parents, I mean, I have a son, and I've continuously helped him in some manner. But it gives me great joy. You know, some people say, well, you spoiled them. No, I didn't. I helped him to evolve into the man that he is, really. He's everything you could ever want in a son, a husband, and a father for my granddaughter and my daughter-in-law. I mean, so what I did with him, and I still continue, you know, now I help my granddaughter, but I still continue to do that, and it's a wonderful feeling. It really, really is. I mean, you're very lucky because a lot of people don't have parents like that. They'll just say, okay, time to go, goodbye, don't bother me. I never did that. And obviously with your parents, look at how you turned out.
I'm eternally grateful.
Yes, absolutely. And I can tell. I can tell in your voice that, you know, you're appreciative and you So you took on some part-time work. I'm kind of curious. What did you do? What kind of work did you do?
Well,
did you do any at all? I mean, I know you had royalties, and I know.
Right. I mean, eventually, along that path, I did get married, and I had spent all those years in study and learning, and I started teaching. So every opportunity to teach, whether it was a substitute position somewhere in the field of education, or, you know, there are a lot of people that do summer trips or winter trips to come spend time and visit Israel. So
right.
I was spending a lot of time with people who are coming to visit, and basically any and every opportunity that I had that made sense where I could be involved in teaching. Eventually that turned into writing. I put out a book at some point. I guess it was almost 7 years ago now. So probably about 6 years in or 7 years into that journey. So I wrote a book, which was, you know, I took with me to, you know, to sell. But all of these things were really just to help get us by. my wife had a job. My wife had and has a job. So, you know, if she didn't have a job, there's no way we would continue to sustain that as long as we did. And like I said, I mean, it's this, between my wife, the little bit of teaching that I was doing, and the support of our parents, that's really what allowed us to be in that position as long as I was, and really I should say as long as we were, because, you know, my wife and I have been married for nearly a decade at this point, and, you know, every moment that I'm in some form of study or meditation or anything that's not work-related or involved in trying to bring in some form of income means that, you know, she's working harder to allow me to develop in that way. So
and she supports
really,
you. And, yeah, she supports you in all areas because she knows that this is what you should be doing. She knows. Yeah, she knows. You have any children?
We have four children, thank God.
Oh, okay. Now, are they following their father's path, or what's, you know?
Well, if my path is to be happy and to enjoy life,
yeah,
and to try,
yeah,
to be connected to people and live with love, then they are following in that path. They're young. My kids are, we have a newborn who was just born a couple months ago, and then a 3-year-old, a 6-year-old, and an 8-year-old. So
congratulations on the newborn. Oh, but just think about it. A new kids, they were all born in Jerusalem? Of course they were, right?
Yep.
Can you imagine when they get a little older and they realize where they are? To me, it's the most spiritual place that there is in the world. Now, that's just to me. Now, some people argue with me. But I have an affinity to Jesus, and that's all I know. And so when I have somebody like yourself on, I mean, it's like I'm connected to that land, and I'm, you know, I can almost see it. It's just, it's got to be so beautiful. It just has to be. Okay, so you wrote a book, and then you're teaching and doing all of this thing. Now, how did this newest book, which is such a bestseller, I mean, all over the place, it's all the same to me, how did that come about? I mean, was that a long process for you? Did you just sit down one day and say, well, dear, I'm going to write another book? Or what? How did you do that?
That's funny. This particular book, and I felt, I, in general, I feel this way when I write, which is more of a channeling and a receiving,
mm-hmm,
than it is,
mm-hmm,
a contemplative experience. I had just come back from New York. My wife and I took all our kids. We went on a potential pilot trip to see a job opportunity in Manhattan, which, you know, fulfilled many, many of the things that, you know, one could possibly want, you know, in terms of the type of field work that I would be doing and the type of education work I'd be able to do. And but at the end of the day, you know, our hearts are really connected to this place. We just feel very lucky to be here in Israel, in Jerusalem, and it wasn't the right move. It didn't resonate on many levels. It wasn't just where we live, but it was the wrong move, and that was in February of 2020. And we got back to Israel, I think, on February 28th. And if those dates mean anything to you, it's because I think that was the week that the coronavirus hit Manhattan and really started to spread in America.
So, you were pulled away from all that.
We just missed it.
You were pulled away.
But we had literally just missed it. Like, I was in New York when the first case showed up in New Rochelle. And 5 days later, I was on a flight back home, and then everything shut down. That was it. So that also included all the teaching opportunities that I was doing here. I mean, everything was closed, and the world was shut down for a while there, for this first 4 to 6 weeks when it was really strong. And in Israel, I don't know if you're aware, but over here there was a very strong lockdown, and for weeks, like, people were just in home, and you ordered your food from your computer and whatever, or your phone or whatever it was. And during that time, you could feel the tense energy in the world. You could feel fear and sadness and anxiety.
Yep.
And for me, it was the opportunity to step deeper into my own spiritual practice, which is to really be in concert with God, with a loving, directed, supporting universe, to really be in touch with my own soul. And during that time, I felt compelled to write this book on those ideas. And I sat down, and like I said, it was channeled. I don't really take any credit for this, but, you know, a week later, I had this book. And
it took you only a week to do this?
That book took a week. I mean, again, the editing process and the time
well, yeah,
it took
to get
from...
Yeah, but I mean, to come from you. Yeah. You oh, wow, it's wonderful. I love it.
Yeah.
Here's me. I'm having trouble writing my little fairy tale with me and my granddaughter, but mine is about believing. And everybody says to me, well, why do you believe so? Because that's what I am. And even though I was raised a Catholic, I questioned a lot of things as I got to be about 8 or 9 years old. And you know, my first question to myself was, why do I have to be in this building to talk to God? I shouldn't have to be here. I asked myself that. I was 9 years old. And I think, and nobody told me anything. You know, it was just something that I learned. It was a learned thing. And isn't it, when you look at your life, and I think back, while you're talking, I'm thinking back to some of the similarities that happened to me. I didn't write a book, of course, and I didn't go to another country. But, you know, it's amazing how your life moves forth when you realize it's supposed to be this way. Don't fight it. But people just can't do that. They just, I don't know what it is. I really don't understand. Life could be so simple, and, you know, and it's kind of a shame. And I've been very sad. I don't like to watch certain things, because that's part of my belief, and I just feel that everybody should just love everybody and stop all this garbage that's going on. And I don't know. My parents weren't like that. I mean, they were parents, but they weren't really parents. But you know what I'm saying? I don't know where it came from. I just think it came from within. I really do.
And you're obviously a very special soul yourself, who's very, very conscious and very attuned. And I'm happy and grateful that I get to be on the phone with you.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. Well, you know, I have a great appreciation of where you are, and I'm going to quickly tell you, Jesus came to me in a vision, actually, twice. Once it was a dream, and you're going to appreciate this. I was in a car, and the window was down, and I looked down on the ground, and I saw bare feet, and I saw this kind of whitish, creamish robe, not pure white, you know, it had been worn a while, and I looked up. And this man that was there, obviously he thought, well, she doesn't know who I am. So he motioned to look behind the car, and here comes all the apostles. And I looked back at him, and mentally he said to me, now do you believe me? That was the one time. And then when I was, and you're gonna really appreciate this, I've always think about this, and I have to talk about it, is that my husband had Alzheimer's, the kind that he wasn't very nice. And I kept him home. So one day I locked myself in the bathroom, and I'm just sobbing on the floor, just sobbing, because I had had so many months of this, and I thought, you know, one day he's going to hurt me. He's going to kill me, you know. Well, I looked on the bathroom floor, kind of looked down, you know, as I'm sitting on the floor, and I saw the feet and the robe again. And as soon as I recognized it, and this is the truth, I got up, stopped crying immediately. I got up, opened the door, and I was good to go the rest of the time that I took care of him.
Wow.
And I'm forever grateful for the times that I have had things like that come to me. And even when I almost died, I had a 7-foot crystal up here on my back wall. It lit up my whole room. And I knew. I mean, I didn't know what my calling was. I didn't really know I'd be doing what I'm doing today, because that was many years ago. But I almost died. I was saved, and I've been saved other times. Almost a near-fatal accident, and things that have happened, obviously, and I kind of joke about it, but I'm serious, I have a purpose. There are things for me to do. And part of it is bringing beautiful people like yourself on my show that can enlighten the world, because this is recorded, and they'll be able to hear it. And to me, it's a bonus. It's just another bonus in my life that I have. And I want to talk about your book. What is the book exactly about? Let's get into that a little bit. No more about me.
So that was a pleasure to hear. I mean, thank you for sharing all of that. And, you know, obviously you are here for a reason, and you should continue to be blessed to shine your light. The world needs to see it and to hear it.
Yep.
The book is about there's a concept in Hasidus. Hasidus is an aspect of Torah learning, and the word itself is difficult to translate, but probably the closest thing we have is something like the state of equanimity. But the word itself comes from the word shaveh, which means to be equal or the same, which is where the title comes from. It's all the same to me. And when you look at a world like we live in, where nothing seems to be the same, everything actually is totally different. There are no two humans that are alike. There are no two beings that are alike. No two trees, no two imprints. We live in a world of difference and duality, and time doesn't stand still. Time is in constant flux and in constant change. And yet, with all of that, there is a constant, and it is when we come in rapport and in connection with that constant, which is the non-physical, the non-visible experience or energy, however, whatever type of language we'd like to use around it, what that evokes within an individual is the feeling of being connected to the timeless, to the infinite, to the immeasurable, to the indestructible part of who you are, one with life, one with the universe, one with God, one with all that is. And in that space, you experience joy. There, it's tensionless. There's no fear, because things are happening exactly as they're supposed to happen. And,
right.
And we are all working together. So, the subtitle says it's a Torah guide to inner peace and love of life, because when you're feeling and experiencing that state of presence, that state of connection to all that is, within you, what wells up is this overwhelming peace, as well as a deep sense of love and reverence for all that is and for all of life. So that's what the book is about. And obviously it's written as a dialogue. It's written as a dialectic, like a question and answer. And it was almost written in such a way of, if I were having this conversation with somebody and I just told you a new piece of information, well, what would be your question if you just heard that? And trying to intuit the responses that the reader themselves would have as they were going through each bite-sized piece of information.
But it's been so well received. I mean, it's wonderful. Just totally well received. Okay, so, I mean, how did you go about getting somebody to publish it for you? I know Katie is the publicist. Oh, she's wonderful, by the way. I have so many of them. She's, at the top of the list. But how did you go about getting this published? I mean, There's so many books written, you know, some a little bit on the subject, a little bit not. And you should tell everybody what the Torah is. I know what it is because I'm doing a lot of reading. But tell everybody that's listening, what exactly is the Torah?
Sure. So Torah is the, I mean, literal translation is something to the effect of guidance, like a guidebook. But what it is the Jewish version of the Bible and all that comes from it. So I'm not proficient in Christianity to know where Old Testament ends and New Testament begins.
Oh yeah, you don't even want to get into that one.
My understanding is this is all Old Testament. In terms of the written ancient text, this is the Old Testament, as well as all of the oral Torah that followed and the exegesis that followed when that continued beyond just the times of Moses, the time of the desert, and then the times of the prophets, King David, King Solomon, to name two of probably the most well-known kings. And there were many. There were, you know, tens and tens and tens of kings during that time, but those are probably the two most well-known. And then there's a cutoff at the end of that, which stops the what we would call the written Torah, which is based on a level of prophecy and clairvoyance. And then there's a whole other side to it, which is the oral companion, if you will, to all of that which is written, which has been passed down for thousands of years. And there's, I almost want to say infinite, because it looks that way when you walk into a Torah bookshop, but we're talking thousands of years of literature and writing to understand, to explain, to elaborate on, to derive further meaning and understanding in how things apply to new generations. And again, that spans the, you know, every aspect of life from, you know, biblical law to how do you relate to another human being? How do you relate to spiritual concepts like the soul and God and everything in between? That's Torah.
Yeah, if you go and do a Google search on it, you're going to find the books themselves. And in here it says that it was written by Moses, but I have this hunch that it was just not all Moses. Is that correct? I mean, you know, it was... Did he just do it all, or was it a culmination of some other help that he had, or, you know, and it says here, God spoke them, and Moses wrote them with tears. So these were God's words?
I mean, so there are different parts to the Torah, right? So the five books, which is like in English it's translated as the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Torah, are said to be written by or transcribed by Moshe by Moses as the word of God. And then everything after that is written by subsequent prophets and writers along the way. So the first five books are Moses. The next 19 books are not Moses. They're written by other prophets. And then everything after that are by different sages and rabbis throughout history.
I mean, it's amazing. These books, that whole area is just amazing to me because it's our beginning. To me, it's probably because of how I was raised. I was actually baptized a Greek Catholic, and I had a terrible time getting into the Roman Catholic Church. They didn't want me. And isn't that silly? That's just silliness. But my mother went in, bless her, she did something for me. Argued with the head, the Father Gramza was his name, and she argued with him. She didn't see any reason why I could not belong to the Catholic Church, that it was stupid. I mean, she actually said these things, and I'm sitting in the hall, and I'm listening. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I won't be able to walk in church again. you know, but she got me in. I took all the sacraments. I don't know if he was afraid of her, but she spoke the truth. But she was speaking because of her daughter, not because of herself. She was speaking for her daughter, and she felt that that was important. And I have her to thank for that, you know. But, you know, lots of words of wisdom here. Now, I wanted to go back to where we have to go back to Jesus. You know that. I mean, that's a given here. Where is the tomb? Is that in a place? I mean, there's been some doubts of where the tomb was. I don't know why, because of silliness. But it is in Jerusalem, correct?
That's my understanding. And like you said, I think there are some questions about exact location. But I think my understanding is it is in Jerusalem. When my grandmother, who was here several years ago, and she herself, you know, born and raised Christian, and when she came, she went to all the major spots. I think she went to Nazareth, and then she went to the spots in Jerusalem and to Bethlehem, and in all those spaces, she prayed and she spent time there. So, she may have a better clue than I do, but I've actually not been there. It's funny, I've been here for 15 years, and I haven't been to a lot of great spots. You would think that you'd get up and go and travel the whole place, and life is still life. You know, a lot of people can live in New York and still not go to some of the major buildings there. You could live in D.C. and not go to all the monuments.
True.
So you're reminding me that there's a lot more in this place that I have to get up and look to see. So I can't answer your question with any great intelligence because I haven't done the research on it.
Well, should I go there? I want to walk where Jesus walked. I don't know if it's still open, I don't know. But for some reason, and I have talked to people that I respect, I feel I was there during that time when he was crucified. I've had, feelings of it. And somebody who has passed on, we talked about it in depth, and she said, well, how do you feel? I said, I just feel that I was trying to gather everybody to stop it, to stop what was happening. But he held up his hand and he said, don't. You need to stop. You will die. And of course, he died for our sins. I understand all of that, but I don't. I was a young woman, and I see it. I see it in my head. So I think I would get a great feeling should I ever be able to go there. And I guess, you know, if the divine, as we can call it, wants me to go there, I'll go there. Somehow I'll get there, right? I certainly know you.
Yeah, look, is there anything really stopping you? If there isn't, you know,
because
of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Money, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's
go.
Money. That's... Yeah, it's money, but I would certainly contact you and say, okay, get ready. Line it up. I'm coming now. Oh, that would just be the biggest thrill. That would make me feel so good. You need to go to some of these places. You know that, don't you? You really do. It's the whole thing about Jerusalem. And, you know, it's funny. I'm talking differently to you than I did to the other gentleman that I had on my show. And I just have this feeling that you have an affinity to it more than anything. And I mean, here you're born in L.A. You had this freewheeling life, you know, in a rock band. I mean, so that's like flipping over a coin. Your life was flipped over like a coin. Turn it over. Going to be completely different than the other side, and that's what it is for you. It has been. How wonderful is that?
Yeah, it has. It is. I'll say with that, my enthusiasm and my love and my inspiration for life, I think that's what makes the coin the coin. Meaning, you're right. On one side there's a heads, on the other side there's a tails. But
yeah,
they're connected through, you know, the metal that binds them, whatever that metal is. And so I was madly in love with my life and the ability to tour and open up for some of my favorite acts that I grew up listening to, and then to be on tour with them and spend time on the road and all that whole life, and then to come here and find that same love and passion for my own spiritual development, to learn from some of the great spiritual giants who live here in this place, and to involve myself in some of the most ancient texts and spend years uncovering. And it's that same love and enthusiasm I had for music. And then now the same thing with this book, and being able to teach and share the insights and wisdom that I've been blessed to pick up along the way. So it is a different side of the coin, but it's just as much fun. And it probably sounds
I want you to go walking to some of these places. I want you to do that. I really you just have to. You haven't done it yet, but I mean, you have little kids and all that, and you have your things that you have to do. Were you surprised that this book took off like it did?
You know, surprise is an interesting word, because surprise would mean, on some level, I didn't think that it would have the impact that it would have, and I really was hopeful, and I prayed a lot, and I meditated a lot on it, and I worked very hard. I really put my energy and effort into this, so I think the feeling that I had was grateful, and then surprise, I don't think so much surprise that maybe the book sold as well as it did, but so taken back and sometimes brought to tears with the things that people have said about the book and what it's done for them, and there's some public and some private, emails that people have sent to me that really have touched my heart, all the different doors that it's opened up, and people that I've been blessed to meet because of the success of the book. So I'm thrilled that the book has done so well. I'm even more thrilled that it's having an impact, and that I've been able to meet so many great people in the process because of it.
Yeah, on your site here, you've got, and that's moshegershct.com, you have a lot of notations here from a lot of people that, Deepak Chopra and people that recognize what you've done. I want to know, how did you go about getting a publisher for this? I mean, here you have this, okay, so a lot of books have been written. Who published it anyways? Who is Katie with? I don't even know who Katie is with. Who is she with?
I mean, Katie's a publicist, not a publisher, and she's with Smith Publicity. But the publisher is under what's called the Imprint Spirit House, but ultimately this was a self-publish. I did the whole thing myself, start to finish, and put it out through the different channels that exist today, one of them being KDP, which is the Amazon book publishing house, as well as Ingram Spark, which is another big distributor for independent authors. We live in a time and in a world where if you have a message and you can format it and put it in such a way, you can.
Somebody's
going to
take it and run with it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, everybody has that opportunity today.
Well, it's true. I mean, it's really true. I tell people that sometimes. I have three monitors here, and I multitask so very well, and sometimes it's really good, but I do see every once in a while some things that happen that I'm not real happy with, because what it did is it opened this huge door, and everybody and their brother and their mother are going through it, and sometimes it's not always a good thing and an honest thing, but for the most part, it really, really is. It really, really is. I have to tell you a quick story about my granddaughter. She's going to be graduating from high school, and she really wasn't sure what she wanted to do. So we have a school here in Savannah called SCAD. It's an art and design school, very prestigious. So she got, her and her dad and her mom went to visit on Saturday. And I told her, I said, you need to expose yourself to different things. If you don't know what you want to do, how are you going to know what you want to do if you don't look at it? You're just not. I didn't even graduate from high school and listen to me talking to her. But anyways, she went, and my son said to me, he said, she loves it. It's amazing. What happened to her was she went on this movie set, about film design and all of that, never in her mind about doing this. And she said, she calls me Graham Graham. And you know, Graham Graham, she said, you told me that doors will open for me and I have to just look. I said, right. Okay. She said, well, oh my gosh, I feel like I belong there. I'm so happy there. So she's probably going to go there and get a lot of scholarships from it. But you see what happens when the doors open. Mm-hmm. I'm telling everybody this. Here she is. She's 17, and, oh, I want to do forensics. Oh, I want to do this. I just didn't feel that with her, but I didn't say anything. You know, I didn't. I didn't, you know, influence her. But I was so glad because another door opened for her. Whether she does it or not, I don't know. But it doesn't matter. Like for you, look at all these chances that you've had, and you didn't slam the door. You went through, and you looked, and you met people, and I'm just so honored to have you on my show because of who you are. It's not because of what you've done, but because of who you are. There's this nice feeling with you that. Yeah, and that's why I asked you if you wanted to be called Rabbi, because I wouldn't mind calling you that at all. But anyways, you know, everybody, the book is It's All the Same to Me, a Torah Guide to Inner Peace and Love of Life. And it's obviously you love where you are, and you have to go looking around for me and be my eyes and tell me all about the stuff that's there. Because I don't know when I'll ever get there. It would be nice. It's one of my dream places that I want to go to. My son says to me, why do you want to go there? I said, well, if I tell you the story about what's happened to me in my life, you'll see. And it would just be so honorable for me to go. I really, really would. And when I get a chance to talk to somebody there, oh, my goodness, like you. So now in your spare time, if you ever have it, with all your little ones and your newborn, you must. Are all of these things, now this tomb and there's a lot of things to visit there. I mean, and I don't know why I'm keep pushing you to do this. I really shouldn't. It's not very nice of me. But but I want you to do this so you can tell me about it, because I'm going to ask Katie to give me your email address. But do you go to, like, Mass every day, or how does that work for you?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, if you can describe to me what Mass is, I can tell you if I go to the equivalent.
Okay, Mass for me was every Sunday we would go for an hour and listen to the priest give his little talk, and he'd take something from Scripture, and he'd analyze things, but it's probably much better today than it was then because, you know, they were kind of like in a box. Priests and nuns, and I'm not being disrespectful, but they had this attitude, like, you know, and I started questioning everything when I was a little girl. I don't know. I was probably out of bounds with that, but that's just how I was, but that's what it was. Every Sunday we went to Mass and for an hour, and he read something out of the Bible, and that's what Mass was for me. So what is it for you?
So for me, what it looks like is every day, as an Orthodox rabbi and really just as an Orthodox man, my day starts with close to an hour in synagogue of prayer and some time in Torah study, which is followed up by another something between half an hour and 45 minutes later in the day. We pray three times a day. And for many people it's in the morning, but other people have different times. But throughout the day, there's usually a time in the day where you dedicate some amount of time, anywhere from as little as 15 minutes to, you know, I mean, some people spend their whole days engrossed in Torah study understanding. Some people, like you described, are going to hear something from a rabbi at a pulpit, and sometimes they're just going to sit and read themselves. Sometimes they'll discuss in groups. So that's the day-to-day. And then on the Sabbath, on Shabbat, which for us is on Saturday, in addition to the regular three prayers that we have throughout the day, there's a longer, it's more like 2.5 hours of prayer, as well as a talk, you know, somewhat of a sermon, discussing something that's related to the weekly portion, the way that the Jewish and Orthodox world has broken down reading the Torah is if you read a certain section of it every week, so you go through the whole thing every year. So globally, every Jewish synagogue is reading the same portion at the same time, right? So everybody is in sync.
Oh, so I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's really actually quite phenomenal. So
it is.
It's
more than that. It's amazing. I mean, it's just like, wow. That's a wowza. I call them wowza. W-W-Z-A, wowza. That's a big deal. That it really is. Yeah. I didn't know that at all.
It's amazing. I mean, I can go anywhere in the world this Friday night, literally anywhere, any synagogue in the world this Friday night, and if they asked me to speak, I'd have something to say because I know where everybody in the world is. Right, that we're all in the same place, you know, as far as the
mm-hmm.
portion of the week is concerned. So, it's beautiful and gorgeous, but that's what it looks like. So it's three times a day, and then there's a little bit more time on the Shabbat. That's how much time we spend in synagogue and temple, and the rest of the time we're out in the world, and you know, you're either working, or you're learning, or it's time with family.
No wonder you don't have time to go walking to these places that I want you to go to. You're too busy. But you can walk and pray at the same time. I bet you could.
Yes, you sure can. Yeah.
That's your assignment. I love it. I love it. You're such a beautiful man, you know, and I, again, it's such an honor to tell me something. Why did you want to be on my show? I mean, I'm a nobody. I mean, I'm not a nobody, but you know what I'm saying.
I told Katie, I just asked her, I said, is this a good person? She said, this is a good person. So I said, then I want to do it. It was that simple. It wasn't a long back and forth, you know. I trust her, and she's
been great. Oh, yeah,
I've dealt
with her a long time. Sometimes, you know, and I write all my own emails to these people, you know, so they get to know me kind of through my emails. And, you know, if I say, you know, I want to get this person, okay, hold on, give me some dates, and I get them. All I have to do, and there's very few people that I don't want, even if they maybe are a little bit of a challenge because, you know, and I knew I could talk to you because of where you are and what my belief system is. I knew it. And, you know, I think everybody should go to your site here that you've got. Let me go back to it so I get it right. I don't want to mess things up. It's moshegershit.com. And his book is It's All the Same to Me. And it's a Torah guide. Now, Torah guide is like a Bible kind of thing. It's a series to inner peace and love of life. So if you're curious about it, you know, but you can really look everything up on the Internet. Isn't it wonderful? I mean, I can Google anything. How do I do this? How do I do that? You know, it's so amazing, and it's so nice for me to be connected with people all over the world, and that's what I do, and that's what I love. So I had a lady from Singapore last week. Singapore. Of course, I had to be up at 8:30 in the morning here, but that was okay. I loved it. I loved it. We laughed and we went over time and stuff like that. So do you feel that you're going to have another book coming out? I mean, I know this just came out in what, February? Yeah, February.
But yeah, this did come out in February. And the truth is I am working now with my agent on my next book, and I'm really excited about it. I can't say too much about it at this moment, but...
No, don't. No, no. Okay. I'm encouraging you to do another one. And I'm encouraging you to do the book kind of like how you talk to me. How, you know, I know you channeled this other one, but I just think this other book is going to be a little different. I think it's going to be different.
I'll
be looking forward to it. So, boy, I'm giving you all these ideas, aren't I? Oh, you're going to go home and say, well, she wants me to go over here, and then she wants me to go over there.
Yep.
God, I don't have enough hours in the day.
Well, don't stop. I love it. I love your energy. I love the bubbly energy inside of you, and it's all good and beautiful and positive. And I appreciate it every moment of this conversation.
Oh, you give me goosebumps. I'm so honored to have met you. Maybe one day I'll meet you in person. If I go there, I'm going to let you know. I'm going to say, okay, get ready. Get your walking shoes on. No, I won't. A lot of these things are far away from you, correct? I mean, Jerusalem is pretty big, right? I mean, some of these famous places like the tomb and all of that, which we don't really know if that really was the tomb. I mean, that's what we're, you know, they're basing their knowledge on information that they got. So I'm sure there's some truth to it. But I've been hearing that might not be the place. And he died there also. Jesus died there also, right? And I see this road in my head. This road that I would walk, and I look up and I can see almost an incline, and I know I went up that incline. I know I did. And I think I would get a very, really good feeling. And I don't know if it's still there or not. It could be leveled. You know, sometimes they change things over many, 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 many years. And we don't need that there anymore. And then somebody comes in and tears that down. But I'm hoping that the places like that still exist. I'm hoping that they do.
I think they do. I'm pretty sure they do. And you know, I think the most monumental place I had been to in Jerusalem is the Western Wall, or Wailing Wall, however they like to call it. And I've spent time there, and I have gone down and done some tunnel tours because, you know, Jerusalem is a city built on a city, built on a city, built on a city.
Correct.
You know, it's been built over many times, so...
So there's a lot of things underneath. Yeah, there's a lot of...
Yeah,
are they still doing work?
Stuff.
Are they trying to uncover things? It's probably pretty difficult to do that because things cave in. I mean, you have to be so careful.
Yeah, but they're doing that all day, every day. I mean, there's excavation going on all
mm-hmm.
over the place in Jerusalem and all over Israel. I mean, there's so much antiquity that's here, so they do search to try to find...
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to let you go, but it's been such an honor. I hope to have you on my show again. Oh, yes, I'm going to have you on my show again because you're going to say to me, Natalie, I went and saw this, and I'm going to tell you all about it. Now, you know this is on your shoulders. You know God is telling me, Jesus is saying, you got to tell him this. You got to tell him this. See, I'll be there by osmosis.
Right. Well, look, maybe we can conjure up another miracle and get you here, so...
Well, that's right. They're listening. I talk to God every day. Sometimes I have to tell you,
though,
sometimes it's not always nice. Sometimes it's like a dissertation and people laugh. My son says, what are you doing? I said, well, look, I'll say to him, you know, that was a blunder today. It was a real blunder. Now, where is that coming from and where is that leading them to? I'm very open. But, you know, in school I was very shy. I think I was just absorbing everything. I mean, I can be shy, but not talking to somebody like you and talking on the radio. So you have an awesome, what time is it there? It's an evening time for you, right?
That's right. It is now dark outside.
What time is it?
It's 7 p.m.
Oh, okay. All right. Maybe dinner time or something like that. Say hello to your lovely family, and thank you, thank you, thank you for being on my show. I'm just so honored. I really, really am.
I will. This was my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Okay. All right, everybody, you know how I am at the end of my show. I don't have another show not till next Friday, the 22nd. Aha! Usually I have two in 1 week, but not this week. Anyways, I always end my show the same way, and that is believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. And I know my friend is listening, and he's probably thinking, where did that come from? I have no idea. But I say it at the end of most things that I do. because I'm trying to get people to believe, because that's when beautiful things will happen to you. But it's got to come from within. Believe, you can't read it, you can't write it. It's got to come from within you. And that's how things are. And we can't, you know, if you have doubts, the universe has doubts. Well, maybe they're not ready for this. Did you ever think of it that way? So anyways, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there. So, okay, with that, we're going to end up here with our usual. Candy's in the chat. I want to thank her very much for doing all that she's done. She promotes everybody every week. And sometimes there's two interviews or talk shows. I like two talks. And, gosh, she has her work cut out for her because they're almost like back-to-back. So she can't sleep. I don't let her. And she does the little movies and the videos and she's just really an asset. And so I'm going to let everybody go here. And we're going to play. Her name is Gabby Ray. I'm remembering her name, Candy. You see that? And she's going to say something to me in a minute. But, yes. So listen to this. You know, and it's synonymous all over the world, and that's free to love. Here we go.
If everyone could be who they were really meant to be, without limitations, discrimination, this world could show all its colors. So get the chip off the shoulder.
Remember, believe in things you cannot see. They really are there.